And I was at the Rodin Museum. It was a rainy morning. I was the only one there except for somebody else. There was a child, a 10-year-old child, I would say, and he was blind. And he was with somebody. I took it to be his mother. And she was taking him to the statues and teaching him how to see. She'd position him in front of the statues, and he'd push out his hands, and she would tell him what the lines meant. The blind boy and his mother at the Rodin Museum. First, there were the circles around lights and the zigzags in the dark. Then shoe leather at fire drills and the rasp of his own corduroy louder in corridors. While he stumbled from bright to shadow down to this, his mother wept in closets muffled in blouses. Until against the shudder of a jacket, she pressed between her teeth the cuff of silence and taught him how to see. How to finger the world like an anteater's tongue and feed. To hold out all he had, his 10 years, one on every finger. More prone to sight because she said she put them there and he believed because she didn't lie. Her own fingers drifting across his face, lit to the bottom of his fright, and being seen or known or loved, for what's the difference? He could sleep. She taught him first on statues, for they are shy and hide their past in creases, as pleats keep music in a faded dress. And patient, holding still their secrets deeper than a chisel. She even taught him what he couldn't know, being 10. Turned his wrist so that a breast cupped in his hand. And when he turned to ask an explanation, she fell into a silence and moved him on. Like other boys, she taught him something to forget. Dropped like a bean in a dark furrow, for other hands than hers to light, sprouting at the bottom. My hands are shaking. I thought I'd read you some love poems, or sort of, you know, that's to be interpreted loosely. Matching. We are joined in the middle by the latch of the clavicle. Two-sided as an inkblot, folded down its center. The wings of a butterfly clapping. At the edges of each other, we seek the same. Hand for hand, thought to thought. It is a child's game, this, the red beads to the red cup. This is called Romance, and it's in memory of Margie Martin and Tony Paroli, wherever they are. This is from my childhood, and this really was Romance. The lady with the second-hand face, skinny legs and chipped teeth, spent her cereal days pumping a sewing machine to afford hamburger and chicken backs, and waited for Junior to come home from jail, good, the way he never was. The gentleman ran the merry-go-round at Pope Pius XII Carnival on Dyckman Street, pushing the singing lever with his hard belly that rose over his bandy legs like the moon, working his face to smear the mustache crooked around 6 gold teeth. For 5 nights, she rode the same horse, the black one, like Bucephalus, and smiled her chipped smile, chipping away everything but the horse and the wind, and the bandy-legged man who pushed the singing lever to make it go. They stayed together 16 years, getting fat on spaghetti and Pabst Blue Ribbon. His belly grew higher and hard. Her teeth continued to chip. On his shoulders, down his arms, bloomed dragons, mother, and a bright blue rose. And when he left, that day like any other, with his bandy legs and gentle hands, she set the table, straightened the spread, and sprayed for roaches from a big black can. Rapunzel. When he saw her singing in his dreams, her hair like lofty hay bulging out the window slits, he called, and she, braided in his silver voice, let down the golden line. If she was unwise about such things that girls are taught, of men with chocolate kisses who offer lifts to lessons, who stand too close in subways playing with their change, then what was he, caught in that small room, the braid coiling the floorboards like a snake, and she all Rubens ripe and curious? Oh, the tower singing on that wheezy couch, forbidden fruits in platters of her flesh, and he with scars to touch along his side and many wondrous things to name, until like hair undone, they slept inside that nest, fledglings on an apple bough all golden delicious. What's this of guilt and fall? A forbidden fruit to make us wise? The bitter sin of Sundays? They coupled in a cave or on a bank in Eden. Let us hope for art. The stars were out that night, and tigers padded softly in the bush. Stopping clocks and other hopeless matters. It happens too fast when it comes. Bathing the children, delivering milk, then caught in a tomb of ash. Or if it's blessing, never time to gather pots to catch the rain or man the fields, tomatoes left rotting in the sun. We wait and watch the sky. I want to go back to yesterday and do it over. You in a Turkish robe reading Coleridge by French windows, smoking Italian cigarettes and saying Descartes and Heraclitus, and I being 27 and enamored of your hands, as it was, waving goodbye, the car blurring in the rain, my hair graying all the way home. Township Line Road. The trees tell of it, how last night we walked to watch them easing down their summer. They'll say that we seemed lost, as if our clothes, loosened by the wind, yearned too to slip their hold, but we had left our beds behind and wandered. They'll say we didn't speak, not even when we stopped to point the stars, but stood and swayed a little, looking up, our eyes like milk pod gone to seed, silk-lined shells spent, waiting patiently for snow. They'll say we didn't touch until we saw our shadows downed like logs, axed or lightning struck, and then our sleeves brushed, oak dry as November. They wonder if we will return, or if, like things too young, we frightened of the cold and lay down easy, not knowing how to wrap warmth in a woody skin, how to grip down for the waiting. from the diary of the Queen of Russia. Bored. Bored with barons and cognac, ermine and the mazurka, the sweet of my shoulder by candle. Bored with touring students from the university, collecting wet dreams from corridors that whisper of my skirts. Bored with ministers who declare war just to share me, bending scented over maps. I, the Queen of Russia, one necessary night, stars flung like salt, low under the barn roof, spread out like butter on black bread, like caviar on crackers, and bedded the stable boy because he had good hands and wasn't particularly busy. The Reckoning. We meet tonight to pass the point of blame. Dealt out like a marked deck, sticky from past games and fingers. We meet in the hole of last week's fire, scorched grass, scrub, two bloodhounds sniffing at the blackened stones. On a nearby twig, a mantis mates and mangles in the same clutch. It is an old confrontation, an ancient fire, the horse-drawn gift of Greeks wrapped in the ribboned knot of Helen's legs, the wet slick that licks the scrotal sack, oils the flare and rages. The pyre of Troy was struck when the bed of Paris heaved with heat, running fire down the sweet sheets, scenting blood with lavender. No wonder of it. The angel's sword was struck in Eden, it roots where it fell, blazing in orchards. And we, promised by blossoms, run gathering bushels of cinders, black and still as nuns. Mirage. Let us not name it, this change in our old politeness that hangs in the air, making you blush and tugs at my compulsion to weigh things down with words heavy as a headline. Do not wonder if it's anything you've said or something that I've noticed behind your glasses, suddenly a pale difference. Or that in my solitude I've begun to wonder what you do at night and where and when. The word makes flesh, and I have had enough of that. For God's sake, say nothing. Even these lines cross over into alien territory. Let us stay in the old application of the desert, where nothing is built, where except for an occasional tent pitched for dates and tea, one wanders alone, cool in white linen. This promise of deep water and silk skin that whispers to us from the corner is only a shimmering, a trick of the heat. Look the other way. And time will smile from behind our newspapers again, like strangers on a commuter train who once warmed themselves in the same waiting room and have decided to forget. Night watch. I am greedy, and this seems all. Beach of a morning's mooring, dock and safety, and a bright boat for marlin and trolling shark. Hamlet and Odysseus, night and day together. Ah, love, I want to say true to you. I want to show you where I live. The eagle beating in the walls, the carcass under the floor, and me yanking boards to get them out. I want to offer you my back in sleep because it is vulnerable and dips into me deep. And yes, it matters that your hands scooping out the air between us when you speak are wrapped in heavy veins and remind me always that things die and lower in their own ropes. Under your eyes, the skin shines as though they drank down what they saw, as if you kept an owl in your chest to watch me sleep. Hold me in the dark this meanwhile. Fill your hands with shell and pearl, and when I turn with small dark stone, tide sends up little treasure that is whole, that doesn't need to be pieced and secured like cargo in the hold. I want to finish up and tell you some, read you some poems about my family. This is an old, old poem. The 55th poem I ever wrote, actually. It's about my grandmother and grandfather, one of those couples who should have never gotten married. You know about that. And this actually happened. She was a good, dutiful wife. Ancestry. Grandpa was spare and straight, fussed the forks and spoons around the plate and burped when dinner would be late, mowed the grass in a boiled shirt and helped Cronkite keep alert with Dow Jones and strikes and wars and such, just for Grandma's sake, of course. And she, wound in silent braids, and four kids before hot water and 6 years wrung out to 60 lines of boiled shirts, washed the forks and spoons around the plates and shook if dinner would be late. But the year before she died, when the arteries tightened in her head like rawhide straws, she'd point and call him bugger and giggle behind the doors. Remember when you were a kid and you took an apple and you twisted off the stem, you go A, B, C, D, and where it came off was the name of your own true love? D is for Daddy. Twisting off the apple stem to the name of one's own true love. Once a beamlet child sung A, B, C, D. Then carried it cradled in its taffeta skin, curled through the evening of a book, and later born to an early sleep, this pippin, this charm, this rose meat. In bed, the darkness nibbled slow, until the hope was swallowed down, small by little to the thin core bone, not praised, not blessed, not gathered up, so young you could see to the five brown tears, hard and bitter in their shells. This is about my mother and father, and it's about a photograph I carry around with me. Photograph. She stands by the crib, looking down, uneasy. He looks out, not sure they should be in that frame of first month's yellow, cribbed and curtained innocence. What would be expected? What obligations whispered from the yellow bars? I used to carry it around with me, keep it, like the remnant of a voice I might need access to, whose possibilities made me write its number in the book year after year without a name, an old key I found among the jewelry and scarves that might unlock some fantasy for myself I never found or filled and could not throw away. I am as old as she was then. One must give up the knives that gave such pleasure. Outside, November lowers into winter. The mountains in the distance seem closer, their outlines clear, even to the juts of pine. In here, it seems enough that an avocado ripens on the sill, and the Chinese fantail, her gills gashed open, can hum in a cut glass bowl. It's getting late. Three more poems I want to read. Two of my children are here tonight. The two oldest, my sons, they're over there somewhere. And to those of you who have children, you know that there's something about them, you know? They are the threshold you trip over. This is called plexus. Plexus is a network of nerves or veins. To Paul. And it opens with lines from Yeats, Among School Children. What youthful mother, a shape upon her lap, would think her son, did she but see that shape with 60 or more winters on his head, a compensation for the pang of his birth or the uncertainty of his setting forth? It is easy between us today. I yank weeds and you lean against the hoe, asking how it was with me when I was 22, as if intent on flux, I'd let slip all you'll need to know. We both turned to watch a jay dip and swing up to the telephone wires, the lesson of vulnerability in the flash of the white underbelly, the tiny feet tucked up, red as a newborn. I turned quick to stare at the ground, blind as if I got up too fast. Listen, there are things I haven't told you. Sometimes when you laugh, your head thrown back, I see the pulse ticking in your neck, the fluttering balance of its bones, your dark blonde hair strained in sweat, the eyes turned to me wide as a deer's looking down the path of a gun. Even when you're not here and I walk easy, the trees clasp overhead in blessing, or when I stumble through the tunnels holding out my hands so I might know that last brick wall before it hits, I walk on the balance beam of your breathing, a rabbit on a night road staring into the headlights of a car. I wanted to read you some poems about Indiana because I know that you're just fantastically curious, but we'll let that go for next time. The last poem I want to read you is some advice about economics. Everybody's concerned about Reaganomics and economics, and this is my, I do want to be up to date. The name of this poem is called Economics. Every year the peacock drops its tail, rains down glory from the fence post, flinging its wealth away. The trees, too, hold their leaves, wait for payday, then dump gold. A cardinal feeds among sparrows. The sun shines down on everything. In Italy, where walls tilt with treasure, Keats lies narrow in his bones. His only wealth, the two coins slipped from his shrunken eyes. Yet people come in jeans and backpacks, in pleated voile and Gucci shoes, blue-haired ladies and gentlemen up the Spanish steps to see where one who spent himself had lived. In my backyard, the lesson repeats. It is July, the season of gathering up, the plumping before the harvest, the accumulation of funds. What is your life if all you've done is weed an empty patch of dirt? Don't ask the trees. They're busy pulling water, pushing out the leaves. Thank you. Thank you.